91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jeff Beery.
I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Vicki Gregor. On today's show, Fort Collins folk group Shell joins us for a performance and interview. Itinerant bassist C.J. Boyd shares reflections from his last 8 years continuously on the road. Musicologist Ryan Benigali gives us a sneak peek at the upcoming Billy Joel Conference at Colorado College, and members of the Pikes Peak Theater Organ Society share their love for an endangered instrument. All that today on Air Check.
As usual, we begin our show with a musical roundtable where we go around and each of us shares a new release that we've been loving over the last month.
Jake, let's start with you this time. You are starting this roundtable.
All right. Well, the song that I would like to pick is a song that is kind of like a summer jam to me in a way, which is probably not totally appropriate for October, but we need to cling to those last moments of summer, right, as much as possible. So this is a song by a British band, a band out of South London, and the band is called Beach Baby, and the song is called No Mind, No Money. Kind of a jangly, sort of slacker rock, surfer sound, but I love that guitar, that chunky boom.
Oh, that intro. There's like a tubular kind of effect to it. And then you get about halfway through, and there are these very sunny oohs going on. That's kind of a nice touch.
Beach Baby.
Beach Baby, yeah. So it's out of South London. I think they met at Goldsmiths. London, also famously where Blur met.
Uh-huh.
Kind of a long legacy there.
Got that mojo.
Damon Albarn is my celebrity crush. Yeah. I think I've mentioned that before.
Nice choice. What's the rest? Is the rest of the album
solid? The rest of the album is very solid.
And the album is called?
The album is also called No Mind, No Money.
All right.
And solid album all the way through. And, you know, these guys are kind of an up-and-coming band. Haven't had a whole lot of exposure around the world yet, but I think they're on a U.S. tour right now, and it'll be fun to watch kind of where they go. That's all. All right, Jeff, it's your turn.
Well, I think I can kind of tie into your Across the Pond band pick with another band that's from across the pond, from the land of IKEA, a Swedish band, but this ain't no ABBA. Band's called The Amazing, and they have a new CD out called Ambulance. And the song is called Blair Drager. what I like about this band is, one, they're from Sweden.
Can't go wrong.
I mean, you could be sitting on an IKEA Skogaby couch and enjoying this just fine. But I like this. I like this. Kind of got a spooky David Lynchian intro, and the vocals sounding a little bit like Chris Isaak. And it's, you know, it's interesting because I'll play an album and it's got to have a 51% success rate. 51% of the album has to be good. Or I just won't. If it drops below 50%, it's like, I'm not going to bother with this. Right?
Yeah, we're from
the day and age when you bought the whole album.
Yeah.
You invested in the whole thing, and you wanted it to be play from start to finish.
There's a musical idea that needs to be developed
and
over the course.
And so if it's just one song off of an album, forget it. Not worth it. But so I put this in my car stereo, and I listened to it all the way through. It's pretty solid all the way through. I'd say it's about an 83%.
Wow, that's
success.
Pretty high on your rating. I have to tell you, it had me at this guitar intro, which makes me think immediately of Johnny Marr and How Soon Is Now, and that whole Bo Diddley kind of. There's a little bit of spookiness to it.
It's nice. I definitely, the David Lynch thing was the first thing that popped into my head.
Spooky.
Twin Peaks. Yep. Just imagining all the various...
What the hell's going on?
...characters and scenarios.
The Log Lady.
That's right.
Popped into our mind.
So there's mine. Vicky, what do you got?
It's a band, a Brooklyn-based band.
Oh, bringing it home to the good old U.S. of A.
This side of all that water. And they're called the Mystery Lights. And what's very cool about them is they're on a record label called WIC, which is Daptone's imprint. So Daptone's so successful, now kind of stretching out and bringing some rock and roll, etc.
Daptone's record subsidiary.
Mm-hmm. And this was the first signing. So the song I love from the Mystery Lights is Follow Me Home. Here's this young band. They've been playing all around the city, rooftop shows, you know, courtyards, alleys, and some of the Daptone folks noticed them and brought them over to this label.
And started up a record label just for them.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Pretty much. And it's just that scuzzy psych. I mean, this could be straight off of the Nuggets collection.
Yeah.
This could be 13th floor elevators. And for a band this young to be this authentic in the sound, really just blew me away.
Daptone, I think of that strong kind of soul sound and that throwback in a way to 60s soul music. And this one, it's like they've got a new imprint and maybe they're throwing it back a little more recent, but a different style, but still in a similar way, really,
retro.
Really retro. Yeah,
that's very insightful. And if they keep doing that and sending out those tendrils and developing bands who are hearkening back, I'm just going to have a big hook in my mouth, and I'll go with it every time.
So this is the first on the WIC label?
Yep.
Is there any tease of other new albums?
I haven't heard anything at all that's following this. It's their official debut, although they've done a couple of EPs. They did a cassette-only release of an earlier piece of work, but this is the big time for them.
Cool. I think Daptone can do no wrong. So if this is a Daptone subsidiary, I think it's a winner.
Yeah, thumbs up in a big way.
Well, that wraps up this edition of the Musical Roundtable. Thank you, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jake
Good
and
choices.
Jeff.
This is Aircheck from 91.5 KRCC.
Touring is part of life for working musicians. Some people love it, some not so much. But Jake, for our next piece, you talked to an artist who has made a life out of touring.
Yeah, his name is CJ Boyd, and he's a bassist who makes this really gorgeous, immersive instrumental music, all built around the bass. For years now, he's been on what he calls a permatour, or infinitour, living out of a van, traveling from one show to the next, night after night, month after month, year after year. He plays house shows, bars, coffee shops, venues big and small, and has traveled all over the world. He's been through Colorado Springs a number of times, and I recently caught up with him before a show at Mountainfold Books downtown, and he told me a bit about his life on the road. So I want to start by talking about your touring life. You've been on tour constantly since 2008. What was the impetus for that decision back in 2008? Why did you decide that this was the life you wanted to live?
Well, I had toured a lot before that too, but you know, like normal tours of, you know, a few weeks, a few months at the most. And I just sort of got to the point where I thought, okay, that's the thing that I love doing the most, is traveling and playing music. So why am I doing other things just to be able to do that once in a while, rather just do that? And honestly, I didn't know. When I set out, I thought it was open-ended, but I didn't know how long it would last. I thought maybe 6 months, maybe a year, maybe multiple years, but I didn't know.
And here you are, 8 years later?
Yeah, about 8 years later.
A lot of musicians I know and I've talked to, touring is sort of a necessary evil. You go out on the road because you have to. You know, it's another way to sort of get your stuff out there and to make some cash. But it sounds to me like it's sort of the other way around for you. What is it that you love about touring so much that you would want to do it constantly forever?
Yeah, I don't know if I really believe in necessary evils. I mean, so before I went on permanent tour, I was a graduate student for about 4 years. And as much as I was studying philosophy, and as much as I loved that for the intellectual stimulus, I felt like more and more, like, I don't want this life. I don't think this is me. I felt like I was attempting to become something that just didn't work. So I quit the PhD program. So at that time, I mean, I just thought of, like, well, when I'm on tour, like, I really like that. That's fun. And I feel like myself. I think a lot of people are willing to do things that they don't really enjoy because they think there's some payoff in the end. And sometimes there is. But that tendency in general, this idea of necessary evils, that we have to do this now because, well, we want this other thing and there's no way around it. Sometimes it's true, but I do think that we settle for that explanation a little too much. All that is to say, if I didn't like touring, I wouldn't tour. Nobody's making me. I feel like there's something about this lifestyle to me that it's at least very clear that what I'm doing, I get joy out of it. I hopefully bring some joy to other people.
Do you feel like the lifestyle you live and the music you make somehow reflects a set of values that you have about, you know, how people should live or how the world should be, something like that?
I would say that touring specifically, like traveling as much as I do, I mean, to see the differences of how people do things. When you travel around and just see the differences that exist in places, it puts you in a better position to think critically about the way they do things where you're from. And if you stay in one place, you're not going to have things to compare to. And you are more likely, I think, to get sucked into the idea of, but it just has to be done this way because we've always done it this way. And so that's, I feel like that's a half answer to your question. The other part, as far as whether or not my music reflects the philosophical values that I hold, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I feel like the music that I'm compelled to make comes from a very different place in me than my more critical thoughts. I do think that, and I struggle with this a little bit, I do think that what I do can be an escape. And I, in general, I'm not a fan of escapism, but I think that when the world is as tough, as just hostile as it is, there's something that I obviously value about taking some time to just be somewhat at peace and in a safe place and just revel a little bit. But, you know, in those moments where the world is so difficult, I think there's something that I do look for, that I personally seek and also want to provide, as far as just like a place for the music to be a place where things are beautiful and things are kind and that things make sense and express love.
Having been on the road as long as you have, is there a place that still feels like home to you?
I mean, a lot of places feel very home for me, but not in the same way. I mean, I grew up in California, a little town called Santa Maria. That region still feels like home in a different way because I grew up there. I mean, you have these associations of your first kiss, your first fight, you know, all these things in your life, and no other place is going to have that. But, you know, I lived in Tacoma, Washington. I went to college there. Went to grad school in Nashville. Like, those two places also have this home feeling, I guess, in a different way. But yeah, I do think that the shift that happens with being on the road this long is that, maybe just sort of by necessity, you just grow to feel kind of at home regardless of where you are. I mean, I've recorded in in-and-out bathrooms, and like I've slept in my van in every possible kind of neighborhood. So I, over time, you just have to feel like, this is all home. This is me. This is everywhere is where I belong.
During this 8 years that you were close to saying screw it?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I mean, a couple years ago my van died, so I spent like a year and a half touring without a vehicle, like doing tours with other projects where somebody else had a vehicle, or touring in Europe a lot where I just used trains mostly. Doing a lot of buses, a little bit of trains in the U.S., and it was exhausting. And there were times throughout that where I was like, I better really love this. I have to really love this, otherwise why am I doing this? This is so much stress and so much like constant worrying about how I'm going to get to every place. So there were times, and that's, I guess it's another thing that I get asked a lot. I was like, oh, but so long on the road, aren't you, doesn't that get exhausting? Like, well, yeah, but don't most jobs get exhausting? Don't most jobs get tedious after time? Like, no matter what you're doing, whether it's, I don't just mean professions, I mean like relationships, everything in your life, probably at some point it can get tedious. But I've learned to like accept that there will be moments where it's like, okay, this was a bad idea. But, you know, then you play certain shows. God, I was just thinking about my fourth year anniversary, my fourth anniversary of being on permanent tour. I happened to be in Memphis, Tennessee, and I played this show. Like, it was in the forest. It was like these kids got a generator and just, it's like the flyer or whatever just said to meet at this certain spot, and then you had to just sort of trek with them out into this forest, and I must have been like a 20-minute walk or something. And yeah, there's just these moments where you're like, God, this is my life. Like, I get to just like be playing music in a forest for a handful of kids that are all super stoked to be there. That's so cool. I mean, yeah, I don't want to say it like I'm gloating or anything, but it's so awesome. And if that's like a thing that I do, I can totally withstand some of the like, okay, I'm playing kind of this like saloon in a cowboy town. I can handle that once in a while. Probably try to not do it any more than necessary, but I can do it.
CJ, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Yeah. Again, thanks for having me.
That was KRCC's Jake Brownell speaking with CJ Boyd. Boyd's been on Permatour, a permanent tour for 8.5 years and counting, and you can hear more of his music on KRCC.org. You're listening to Air Check. Stay with us.
From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music from the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Jeff Beery. Vicki, Shell. Recently, the band Shell joined you on the Morning Music Mix for an interview and performance. And we're going to replay that show right now. But first, what can you tell us about them?
Well, Shell is a band out of Fort Collins consisting of four sisters. They play really beautiful indie folk music, and they've actually been pretty successful so far in their career as a band. They even had the good fortune to link up with Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics, who's also a producer who's worked with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and Stevie Nicks. So they stopped by the station on their way to New Mexico and shared some songs and some stories.
All right. Shell, S-H-E-L, in studio with Vicki Greger here on Air Check.
Hold a rose to the flame. Like a coward, you delight in my pain.
I am so excited, really and truly. I have the pleasure of being in the company of four wonderful musicians. It is Sarah, Hannah, Eva, and Liza, known as Shell. Thank you so much for being with me this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, you bet. Bright and early, too, because I know you had a show, and you're rolling into a lot of stuff today. So I just wanted a chance to talk to you a little bit. First of all, the new record, Just Crazy Enough, really, really a stunning effort. And I have to say, we'll talk a little more about the production and some of the people that are attached to it. But noting that you guys do arranging, songwriting, and the producing, I have to ask you, how do you all come together?
Yeah, so we're all sisters, and we were born within 5 years of each other. So growing up, our parents were kind of like, you guys are going to be best friends if you'll let that happen. So that was kind of been our mission. It happened pretty naturally because we were homeschooled and we spent a lot of time together. But we just learned to collaborate together at a pretty young age. And now everybody kind of has their roles, which, you know, we can go in and out of, but everyone kind of has their areas where they lead. And Evie usually does the songwriting for Shell, or she at least starts the idea, and then we all contribute. We collaborate with it and essentially orchestrate around what she started. So we have a lot of fun, and everybody's got different roles. Like Liza's doing graphic design outside of drumming and beatboxing, and Sarah does the videography, and she makes all our music videos outside of playing violin. And Eva's always got her head in the production as well, aside from the songwriting.
Well, it certainly has come to great effect because, again, just we'll let our listeners hear for themselves. But the sound you make is amazing. And really, if this is the idea of what your records are going to be, we're all in for a treat. So let's shut me up and let's let Shell do what they do. Shell in the studios here at 91.5 KRCC.
All right. This is a little track called You Could Be My Baby. My drift, then listen till the needle lifts. You could be my baby, you could be my baby, seem just crazy enough. You could be my baby, you could be my baby, seem just crazy enough to love. You play a double role. They say you're unconventional. Let me set the stage. Sanity is just a cage. You could be my baby. You could be my baby. You seem just crazy. You could be my baby, you could be my baby, seem just crazy enough to love, 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 love. Could be my baby, you seem just crazy enough. You could be my baby, you could be my baby, you seem just crazy enough. You could be my baby, you could be my baby, you seem just crazy enough. You could be my baby, you could be baby, seem just crazy enough to love, 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 love. Ah, ah, ah.
Oh, that is Shell here at 91.5 KRCC in the studio doing a couple songs for us this morning. And that is one of my favorites immediately. You know, growing up as you did, artistic parents, and when you were little ones, did you just gravitate to the instruments that meant something to you, or did you try to sort that out with a bit of a plan?
Yeah, this is Hannah speaking, and I always wanted to be a pianist, so I think from about age five, I was kind of just jumping up and down waiting for that to happen, and I got to take lessons when I was 10, and then there are six kids in the family, so I was kind of like, y'all better find your own instruments, because otherwise I'm never going to get to practice.
And we thought she was so cool. We're like, okay, fine, we'll find something. You do.
I'd like to ask, we have to talk about the whole Dave Stewart thing. Now, this is Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics, most famously, but such an amazing producer and musician and has an eye for talent. Did you just pick up the phone one day and there's Dave Stewart asking to work with you?
Kind of. Yeah, we met. It was like a mutual friend sort of thing. And yeah, she had seen us play and she asked our manager if she had sent it to Dave. And she was like, no, I don't know Dave. And so our mutual friend sent it to him. And then, yeah, he emailed Diana. There was a mutual love for circuses and top hats between us. And I think that's what bonded it.
So. A good way to lead. So did you just exchange tracks back and forth? Did you get to actually work shoulder to shoulder?
You know, we never did get to work shoulder to shoulder. We'd always end up in these really bizarre places, like at his club in London, or in Germany doing a TV show with him. And we'd always go out and have dinner and talk and have these crazy, amazing conversations because he's quite a storyteller and he's been through more than I ever imagined. So that was kind of our experience. But what we would do is we would record all the tracks in Nashville and then they would send those, what would be, you know, probably be around 40 tracks or a little more, over to LA for Dave and his engineer Ned, and they would download them and then they would do programming. And their goal was, they said, you know, we want to augment this sound and kind of bring it to life a little more. So they would do, you know, analog synths and analog drum machines and all the cool hip things that Dave loves to do. And they'd just kind of play around with it, and then they'd send us back 40 or 50 tracks. So that was really, really fun. And it's crazy. So talented and so imaginative, the way that they came up with the parts.
I'm in the studio here today, 91.5, with Shell. And if you could do another song, that would sure be lovely.
You can take a Cadillac, baby, I don't need it. And while you're gone, I'll be walking miles, miles. Gotta get back to the hills where I first tasted sweet water from the well. I can't be all sugar and no spice, there's no thrill. I got plenty of virtue, there's one vice I can't. You're thrown in the river, sink or swim. Well, I was baptized in that tub gym. Mama raised me, always pray and take your medicine at the end of the day. I can be all sugar and no spice, there's no thrill. I got plenty of virtue, there's one vice I can't kill. I only drink thunder from moonshine. Gotta get my fill. I only drink thunder from moonshine. I only drink thunder from moonshine.
Oh, yeah. Shell in the studio, 91.5 KRCC. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you here. I really appreciate taking some time.
Gosh, Vicky, thank you.
Thank you so much for the support.
This has been so sweet.
That was Vicky Greger hosting Fort Collins indie folk outfit Shell on the Morning Music Mix. For more from Shell, you can head to krcc.org. You are listening to Air Check from 91.5 KRCC.
I'm as lost as anyone. Late at night, I dream my way out.
You know him, you love him. It's Billy Joel.
Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight.
Billy Joel is the subject of an upcoming musicology conference at Colorado College. The conference was organized by Ryan Benigale, professor at Colorado College and one of the hosts of Critical Karaoke and A Day in the Life, which run on KRCC. Jeff Bury sat down with Ryan to discuss the life and work of Billy Joel and to ask why he deserves an academic conference.
Now John at the bar is a friend of mine. He gets me my drinks for free. And he's quick with a joke or to light up your smoke.
We're speaking today with Professor Ryan Benigale here at Colorado College. Ryan, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
You've put together a symposium of sorts. What are you calling this this event that's going to be happening here at CC?
Yeah, what we're doing is what we're calling a public musicology conference on the music and lyrics of Billy Joel. It's an event that's going to be providing scholarly insights into the music and career and life of Billy Joel, but presenting it in a public way, presenting it in a way that non-specialists can relate to.
Let's start with, what is musicology?
What is musicology? It's a great question because it's a field that has developed and branched off into many different directions in the past generation of scholarship. Initially, musicology comes out of, it's the German word for it is Musikwissenschaft, which is music science. What it's doing is taking music and kind of looking at it from a very scholarly way, analyzing the score, analyzing the composition, looking at where the music fits into the life of the composer. And traditionally, this has fallen in the Western classical canon of works, right? The German word implies mm-hmm. its roots in Central Europe. But the way that musicology has branched off and developed in the last 20 or so years now really embraces all different styles of music, including popular music. So there's a large field now of popular music studies in musicology. And now the approaches are not limited just to, score analysis and talking about, what happened in measure 5 of the piece. But it's looking at, what is the music saying about the culture in which it inhabits? We get into some more kind of critical theory studies. What is it saying about gender relations at that point in time? And so that's what we're trying to accomplish with this Billy Joel conference, is to say, what has Billy Joel's music been to people for the last 4 decades over the course of this really multifaceted, dynamic, powerful career? And how does that relate to the people that will be attending the conference? Everybody seems to have some favorite Billy Joel song, whether they like to admit that or not. I think there's a lot of people out there who are familiar with his work largely.
I know your focus is Gershwin.
Correct.
And why? I mean, you could have picked Gershwin. There was a pop musician of his time, his mm-hmm. era.
Absolutely.
Why Billy Joel? Why did you pick Billy Joel over another artist, another pop artist?
One of the reasons that we picked Billy Joel for this was in part because of his kind of ubiquitous popularity. Everybody's at least familiar with the name Billy Joel, and if they don't recognize that the song is by him, they recognize the song, right? Whether that's because they've been walking through King Supers and heard it on the speakers, or they've been going to his concerts in Madison Square Garden, people are familiar with Billy Joel's music, and so by taking a kind of common figure like Billy Joel, whose music appeals to a wide audience, I think we can draw in more people to this discussion than we would say with someone like Gershwin or someone like Bach or Beethoven, where there's a smaller community mm-hmm. of listeners familiar with the output of the artist overall.
So you're going to be talking with Billy Joel during this event.
Yeah.
What are you going to ask him? You're facilitating this discussion,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the questions you're going to ask Billy Joel?
Yeah, it's a wide range of questions, and it's a bit of a challenge to figure out what you're going to ask Billy Joel. For 40 years, he's been doing interviews and talking about his life and music. And so the questions that we have to ask, we want to balance between, you know, questions that are coming from the scholarly music side of things, but also that will have resonance with those in attendance during the interview, that they're going to be able to follow the conversation. So we probably won't be getting into questions like, you know, why did you choose to go to the secondary dominant in the middle of the bridge and the fourth beat?
Right. Blah, blah. Pretty academic.
Yeah, it gets a little bit too nuanced. So we're trying to try to balance questions with, you know, how do you approach writing X, or how do you approach, you know, when you have an idea, what's the first thing you do when you're writing a song? So kind of questions that will be a little bit more general in nature. And then some things are a little bit more specific, you know, questions that we're going to be asking about, you know, where does he see his music fitting into culture? You know, trying to get more insight from him about where he sees where he is at this point in his life. Because Billy Joel is someone who's now kind of, I think, in the legacy-creating phase of his career.
Is he, and at this point in his life, is he doing what so many pop artists are doing in collaborating with other artists to maybe symphonies? Is he doing any of that?
You know, he's not doing a lot of collaboration at this point in time.
Him and his piano, huh?
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. And he's got his band, that he's kind of core band that he has around him when he plays these gigs. But the kind of collaborative stuff he's done most recently would be in the early 2000s, he put out an album that was his classical album, an album called Fantasies and Delusions. And the music for that album is all solo piano-based. It's very romantic style piano, classical piano solo. And he worked with a pianist named Richard Zhu to take the compositions that he had created himself and try to flesh them out for a more classical pianistic technique. Now, Richard Zhu is a very talented classical pianist, and so he kind of did some arrangements of Joel's music to put this album together. So that was a collaboration that they did together. Before that, another collaboration would be he had a long-standing tour with Elton John, where they'd be, it was called Face to Face, and the two piano men would face off. Literally, the pianos would be facing each other, and they'd, you know, piano battle back and forth.
The Jew collaboration were there vocals included though? No lyrics? Lyrical content?
No lyrics. And actually, it's interesting because what Billy Joel did in 1993 is at the end of the River of Dreams, there's a song called Last Words. These are the last words I have to say. And he's basically saying, I'm not going to do any more pop songs, because he'd gotten tired of the format. These are the last words I have to say. That's why it takes so long to write.
You mentioned that he created his music with a full album in mind, sort of a larger project than a single. Are you going to address with Billy Joel the digital age and how the MP3s and the iTunes songs for 99 cents has affected pop culture? Is that something that would be a part of this discussion?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's something that, you know, that I sense that I get from other interviews he's given, that he's, you know, is a bit uncomfortable with the way the music industry went. I mean, he's had a fraught connection and relationship with the music industry over his career. One of the reasons I think that Billy Joel has kind of gotten out of the business is because of the different developments of the music industry, particularly with respect to digital distribution. I mean, there's a lot of and he's made comments about, you know, stealing music and music being online and downloading for free. And he's not someone who's going to be suffering from this, I don't think, because his career has done well. But there's lots and lots of other artists that are being extremely challenged and not able to make a living as a result of it.
Sure. One other aspect of being a pop idol is that you're really, I would imagine, the fodder of a lot of gossip, paparazzi. And his marriage, of course, to Christie Brinkley was such a huge event in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Is that going to play into this discussion at all?
I think it has to play into the discussion because, you know, you can't separate, in my opinion, you can't separate the music from the person making the music. And you get so much insight into what's happening and to the different compositions and songs and pieces by looking at and really trying to dig into what's happening. One of the things we always need to remember, though, is that the stuff we see in the headlines and the tabloids is a very different perspective. And you know, it's the clickbait, to use the, you know, modern parlance. Mm-hmm. The clickbait that, you know, look, Billy Joel, you know, got in trouble for crashing his car into a tree. Like, people are going to look at that and not really look at the larger picture of what's going on and why that's happened. And I don't know how much we'll get into personal biography stuff during the interview with him, but it's certainly something that the different presenters and academics at the conference will be getting into in their own talks.
Sounds like it's going to be a fascinating discussion.
One thing for listeners out there, if you want to check this out, is we will be doing a live stream of the events. So if you go on Facebook and type Billy Joel Conference into Facebook, we have an events page, and we'll be doing a Facebook live stream.
Oh, great.
And so if you go to that events page and click interested on it, during the 7th and 8th of October, you can just come on and watch live what's happening without having to actually be physically in attendance.
The college seems to be embracing pop culture more than in years past. Is that true, or am I just looking there in a different light?
Are you just looking there hopefully?
Yeah.
I think it has a bit to do with the kind of a new generation of faculty that they're coming into the campus that are, you know, raised and steered in pop culture, and that's part of their academic
course
of study. It's something that was not off limits to us coming through the graduate school machine where it was a generation before.
Ryan Benigali, professor of musicology at Colorado College. Ryan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
That was Jeff Fury speaking with Ryan Benigali, Colorado College professor and organizer of It's Still Rock and Roll to Me, a conference about the music of Billy Joel. That conference is happening October 7th and 8th at Colorado College. If you need more information, head to krcc.org. This is Air Check. Stay with us. From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music from the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Jeff Beery.
Pikes Peak Theater Organ Society meets every month in a nondescript gymnasium near Memorial Park in Colorado Springs. Picture basketball hoops, parquet floors, fold-out wooden risers, and a little stage at one end of the gym.
Oh, we call it the Organ Gym. It's the Emmanuel Lutheran Church School Gymnasium.
Dave Wiesner is one of the leaders of the Theater Organ Society. An architect by trade, he's devoted much of his life outside of work to the instrument that lives in this gymnasium.
We call it the Mighty Kramer Wonder Organ, or Kramer Opus 1.
Recently, I attended the monthly meetup of the Pikes Peak Theater Organ Society to learn about the Mighty Kramer Wonder Organ. It was a Sunday night, and a handful of people sat around a folding table sharing ginger cookies and soda. They played a few songs on the organ, and Dave Wiesner explained what makes this instrument so special.
This is Colorado's largest theater pipe organ. It's been here about 5 years. It was built by a man named Joel Kramer over his lifetime. And when he died, you can't take it with you, either to the good place or the other place. So he had to leave it behind, and I worked out a deal with his widow to either sell it or buy it. I ended up buying it. Five years ago this month, it was coming into this room in pieces. Five truckloads brought it in with a lot of volunteer labor. And to get an instrument this size reassembled in 11 months with volunteer labor is nothing short of a miracle. there's 2,400 pipes plus all kinds of other apparatus, including drums, cymbals, bells, whistles, chimes, xylophone, glockenspiel, you name it, it's all back there, and it's all real. And it makes marvelous music. A theater organ technically is any organ installed in a theater. When silent movies came out in the late 1890s, they looked for ways to provide musical accompaniment for these movies, and most often it was done on the piano. And then some of the bigger theaters added small orchestras. Well, then several people decided that you could take pipe organ technology and put all kinds of special effects on these organs that would do a very suitable job for accompanying the action and mood of a silent movie. They were designed to be a one-man orchestra. Many, many different sounds played by one man at the command of many buttons. And theater organs had a wonderful but short-lived career. They were developed in the 19-teens, and by 1932, they were obsolete.
Could I ask you to kind of give a sense of some of the different sounds that this thing can make?
Well, the foundation rank of a theater organ is the tibias. It's basically a deep-throated flute, but this organ has lots and lots of special sounds, some of them very loud, like the post horn. It has a trumpet, and there's a couple of different oboes. It's got a saxophone. It has the tuned percussions. The lightest one is the chrysoglot.
And is that actually playing mallets back there?
Yeah, and everything, of course, up there is real. Plus, it has the percussions, it has the tuned, it has the bass drum and the snare drum, so you can do an effect like this. Which comes in real handy for marches.
Why are you interested in this? Why do you spend the time to come out here to build something like this and to learn to play it? What do you love about it?
God only knows. My mother took me to Radio City Music Hall, which is the largest Wurlitzer theater organ ever built, when I was 10. And I tell people I haven't been the same since. But as soon as I saw a multi-keyboarded instrument, especially one with a horseshoe-style console like this that could play an entire orchestra and sound effects and percussions, I was gone.
I'm Keith Roberts. I am the cabinet maker along with Stan on this project. When I was 10 years old, I saw a theater organ on a record album, and I just could not get it out of my mind. I thought, someday, somehow, I would love to sit and touch those keys. At 10, probably I was in my 60s before I actually sat at one and touched those keys, so there was a long time in between. But now I have the opportunity to sit at this, and I'm 73, and it's just a dream come true for me.
Is it as much fun as you thought it would be when you were 10 years old?
Oh my gosh, there's nothing as fun as playing a theater organ. But, you know, those of us who do this are really hooked on it, and it is pleasurable because of the enormous sound that surrounds you. It is real pipes, real sound, and it just fills the room.
This organ would have cost $270,000 to have it taken apart by a professional company, packed, moved, reset up, tuned, and getting back into playing condition. And needless to say, that would not have happened if it wasn't for these guys and their dedicated volunteer labor. This organ would have probably been sold or salvaged some of it and the rest of it scrapped. And sadly, that's what is still happening to a lot of theater organs, because the people that saved them in the 1950s are now dying. And unless there's more people from the next generation, which is our generation, and we're all in our 60s and 70s, and we're looking for that next generation, the 30s and 40 somethings, to come in and fall in love with these instruments and keep saving them. Otherwise, in a few years, there won't be any left.
Do you have any prospects right now? Any people, younger people, who have come through and have said they're interested and maybe seem to have the aptitude to be able to build something like this or maintain it?
No, to be perfectly honest. Our organist at church has a young son who is very interested in theater organ, and he's 10 years old. And, well, that's the age that we fell in love with these things. So we think that, you know, there's probably more like him out there. But we have to find them.
The Pikes Peak Theater Organ Society introduces people to the music of the theater pipe organ on the third Sunday of every month at the Organ Gym behind Emmanuel Lutheran Church. The meetups are open to the public. For more information and for upcoming Organ Society events, head to krcc.org. La, la, la,
la, la. Aircheck is a production of 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs. You can find more about any of the songs or artists you heard in this episode at krcc.org. You can also now subscribe to the Aircheck podcast by searching Aircheck, two words, in the iTunes store. For 91.5 KRCC and Aircheck, I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Jeff Beery.